Welcome to International Trade Minute, Quickfire Trade News, the go-to podcast for those who live and breathe the fast-paced world of international trade. Brought to you by the astute legal expertise of Riedel Law Firm, this is where sharp insights meet the latest developments. I'm your host, and as a seasoned trade practitioner, I understand the value of your time and the complexity of our industry. Today, as always, we'll be diving into the newest headlines with precision and a professional, engaging tone. So wherever you are in this global marketplace, be it in the boardroom or on the go, let's get you briefed and equipped with the essential news from the dynamic realm of trade law. Stay with me. There's a wealth of information headed your way.
In an assertive move to tighten controls on items used in Russian weaponry uncovered in Ukraine, the Bureau of Industry and Security, BIS, has launched an initiative aimed squarely at American manufacturers and distributors. BIS's top export enforcement official, Matthew Axelrod, illuminated the contours of this campaign recently at the agency's annual update conference. A decidedly stern undertaking that saw more than 20 U.S. companies receiving red flag letters in recent weeks. These letters serve as a clarion call to counteract the continued proliferation of American-made goods, which are alarmingly discovered in recovered missiles and drones within war-torn Ukraine. The initiative, building upon efforts in the preceding year, targets manufacturers and distributors of products identified on the BIS list of high-priority items, warning against business with certain foreign customers known for their dubious activities. Axelrod impresses upon these companies the importance of heightened diligence and fortification of their screening processes. Taking a step beyond its past measures, the BIS is now directly forwarding information from commercially available datasets to the implicated U.S. entities. This includes details on over 600 foreign businesses that appear to be funneling goods to Russia, urging American companies to voluntarily cease shipments to these parties due to the significant transshipment risks. But the letters are not just blunt instruments compelling compliance. They serve as an advisement, signaling to American businesses that heightened awareness and proactivity are paramount. The subtext is clear. Identifying and halting shipments to companies engaged in supplying the Russian front is not merely a suggestion. It is a critical imperative. The dialogue at the BIS conference underscored that this action is part of a broader strategy, one that sees BIS Undersecretary Alan Estevez and officials from both the State and Treasury Departments engaging directly with senior leaders of American firms. These discussions are not mere niceties. They are strategic interventions aimed at finding innovative ways to stymie the supply of products feeding into the Russian war apparatus. In the words of Axelrod, this push for collaboration between industry, interagency bodies, and international partners is essential. It's about impeding Russia's military capabilities and setting a deterrent for other nations that might consider treading a path reminiscent of Putin's. In a compelling call to action during the BIS update conference, Undersecretary Alan Estevez underscored the urgent necessity for the private sector to elevate its game in terms of export compliance and due diligence. With an air of resolve, Estevez underscored that the traditional methods are no longer adequate, particularly for companies with complex distribution channels. The Bureau of Industry and Security isn't just recommending, but also spotlighting the need for more sophisticated strategies to sniff out any attempts to bypass export controls. Estevez's detailed discourse included how the BIS, along with its counterparts from the Treasury and State Departments, are proactively engaging with exporters. This joint initiative aims to share intelligence about entities that are potentially circumventing the system, with a notable emphasis on the semiconductor supply chain, a sector that poses significant concerns given its link to Russia and Iran. Estevez painted a picture of urgency, as BIS has interdicted shipments valued at over $284 million earmarked for Russia from February last year to the end of December. Sitting on the edge of their seats, attendees were keenly made aware of the consequences of American-designed products turning up in conflict zones. Estevez appealed to companies to exhibit uncompromising commitment from the top echelons and to invest resources in surveilling red flags, scrutinizing intermediaries, tracing their products, and fostering a culture of knowledge sharing and best practices. The somber reality that American innovation is inadvertently contributing to global conflict was a call that resonated with Estevez's listeners. With a forward-looking view, he drew attention to ongoing efforts to encourage international allies to embrace equivalent export controls. This drive includes recent regulations targeting semiconductor-related exports to China, a topic of heated debate within the chip industry. Estevez passionately concluded that the U.S. must often take the lead, asserting that continuing to collaborate with allies remains a top priority, lest the measures undertaken in isolation become futile. This statement echoes a broader theme of unity and cooperation that has become a cornerstone of the current administration's approach to managing dual-use export controls. With it, Alan Estevez reinforced the message that the realm of international trade, particularly export diligence, is not just evolving but requires a concerted, proactive, and highly strategic response. In our next segment, we're delving into the Further Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2024, an omnibus spending package recently signed into law. Among the myriad of provisions is one that notably reins in the executive branch's efforts to control outbound investments, a move with profound implications for the trade industry. This particular provision, nestled within the Financial Services and General Government Appropriations Act, aims to restrict the Treasury Department's capacity to block U.S. investors from taking stakes in Chinese companies, specifically targeting sectors teeming with innovation, such as artificial intelligence, quantum computing, and semiconductors. The underlying thrust behind this legislation is to prevent what has been perceived as an overreach by the executive, ensuring that U.S. investors retain their abilities to navigate the global technological landscape. In the context of escalating U.S.-China tech tensions, the Treasury has been actively working on regulations to curb investments in strategic Chinese industries. However, critics argue that unilateral action could backfire, hamstringing American investors and hobbling their competitiveness. It's a complex jigsaw, fostering a balance between national security interests and ensuring that U.S. entities can operate effectively in a highly competitive and undeniably interconnected global market. As seasoned practitioners, you understand the delicacy required in crafting these regulations, ones that safeguard national interests without stifling international trade. With this recent action by Congress, we witness a distinct pivot, a recalibration of authority and perhaps a desire to maintain the delicate dance of global economic interdependence. These measures signal a cautious approach to managing the intricate web of international trade relations, especially pertinent to those vested in the booming technology sectors of China. Whether this maneuver will ultimately benefit U.S. trade strategy remains a subject ripe for debate. But one thing is clear: the careful monitoring of this policy shift is essential for astute trade professionals looking to navigate the fluctuating tides of international trade. Stay with us on International Trade Minute as we continue to dissect the impacts of this significant legislative development. In a rather startling turn of events, a Harvard University fellow has been slapped with charges for conspiring to supply arms for a coup d'etat in the embattled nation of South Sudan. Peter Beer Ajak, a recognized peace activist and one-time refugee, along with Abraham Chalkeach, is accused of orchestrating a multi-million-dollar arms deal, the execution of which would transgress numerous international laws and U.S. statutes. Peter Ajak, a veteran of the World Bank and a fellow at the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs within Harvard's Kennedy School, previously sought refuge in the United States after being persecuted by the South Sudanese government. Despite his status and academic credentials, Ajak is alleged to have brazenly sought to amass an arsenal consisting of Stinger missile systems, grenade launchers, and automatic rifles, all in a bid to tip the scales of power in one of Africa's youngest nations. According to the Department of Justice, the expansive list of munitions being sourced was valued at an eye-watering $4 million. In what reads like a plot lifted from a suspense novel, it is alleged that the weapons procurement involved undercover agents, discussions of smuggling routes, and even plans to camouflage the shipment as humanitarian aid. Moreover, measures to elude detection included plotting to grease palms along the way. Should the judicial gavel fall against them, Ajak and Keach could face decades behind bars for an array of charges, including conspiracy to violate the Arms Export Control Act and the Export Control Reform Act, along with contravening arms smuggling statutes. It's of critical importance to underscore the extensive impact of such allegations. This case throws into sharp relief the persistence of illicit arms trade, underpinning a necessity for robust measures to ensure that academia and other sectors are not exploited as springboards for supporting insurrections and undermining international peace efforts. The role of export controls, compliance, and due diligence in the academic arena and the consequences of their breaches, both legal and humanitarian, cannot be overstated. Beyond highlighting a grave breach of national and global trust, this alleged plot paints a portrait of the intricate web of rules and regulations that govern international arms sales and the ease with which they might be navigated by determined actors. In this complex tableau, the threads of legal, ethical, and geopolitical norms are inextricably intertwined, prompting ongoing discussions around how best to refine and enforce the frameworks designed to prevent the movement of lethal armaments into the wrong hands. In a recent exposé, the European Council on Foreign Relations offered a bold stance on the prospect of the United States implementing export controls on green technology to China. The report, authored by Agade Demarais of the Council, posits a grim forecast for such actions, suggesting that not only would they be largely ineffective, but also potentially detrimental to American businesses at the forefront of green energy innovation. The heart of the argument is that clean technology, covering the likes of solar panels and wind turbines, lacks dual use or human rights applications. Demarais contends that these technologies are not intrinsically linked to military or oppressive use, and therefore should not be subjected to the same rigors as arms or surveillance equipment. It's further debated that the imposition of stringent export licensing akin to regulations under the International Traffic in Arms Act might be avoided. In the early stages of policy consideration, it seems the Biden administration nearly crossed that threshold with mainstream green technology but ultimately decided against it. Speculations whisper of a reluctance to stoke the fires of tension with both China and European allies dependent on U.S. green tech supplies. Additionally, American clean tech businesses might bear the brunt of the damage. These firms, diligently working on advancing the future of green energy products, such as advanced batteries, electricity storage, and low-carbon hydrogen, could lose vital revenue from potential sales to China, a significant blow to the industry's development. Demarais also lays bare the international ramifications of such unilateral measures. Not only would export controls on green technology risk igniting discord with European partners, but they could also foster global resentment towards Western democracies. It projects an image of the United States ready to weaponize critical goods essential to combating climate change, an act that could undermine global efforts in this existential battle. In conclusion, the report cautions against rash, isolationist policymaking in the realm of clean technology. The call is clear: for the United States to avoid steps that would stifle innovation or weaken alliances. After all, in the race to secure a greener future, no country can afford to go it alone. And that's a wrap on today's installment of International Trade Minute, Quickfire Trade News. We delved into the BIS Red Flag Letter campaign and the stern measures against U.S. companies inadvertently supplying Russian weaponry in the Ukraine conflict. We touched on Undersecretary Estevez's call for amplified export due diligence in the face of evasion tactics and the tightened restrictions on overseas investments in technologies. The troubling charges of arms smuggling against a Harvard fellow underscored the complexities of international arms control, a sobering reminder of the stakes in global trade law. We also debated the merits and pitfalls of potential U.S. export controls on green technology to China, weighing progress against the need to protect national interests. A special thanks to Rytle Law Firm for bringing this episode to all you dedicated trade practitioners. Join us next time, where we will continue to dissect the undercurrents of international trade and law with the acuity and expertise you've come to depend on.